This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
A huge scientific paper published by James Hansen and a group of international scientists contains dire warnings about how climate change will hit us. Perhaps none is more astounding than a prediction of superstorms this century greater than anything seen in human times. I don't have the scientific training to say this Hansen-led paper is right about superstorms or when they will come. In fact, it's hard to imagine storms we've never experienced, things not even perhaps described in ancient legends. But if Hansen is right, what would they look like? We can get help on that from one of the world's premier experts on violent weather. That would be Dr. Jeff Masters, the meteorologist who has flown into the eye of hurricanes, chased storms, he provides weather forecasts, and he writes regularly for the Weather Underground. Jeff, thank you for joining us again on Radio EcoShock.
Sure, Alex. Happy to be here.
Well, why don't we start here? What is the strongest storm recorded with modern instruments, say in the last 100 years?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because back in the early 1960s, there was a typhoon in the Pacific called Nancy where they thought it had 215 mile per hour sustained winds. But that was taken with some very primitive sort of hurricane hunter measuring equipment. I mean, they didn't have modern GPS or inertial navigation, and that was basically just an estimate that was not deemed very reliable. So we thought for a long time that, you know, really there's never been a tropical cyclone worldwide that's had 200 mile per hour winds. But that changed last year. Back in October, we had a hurricane off the Pacific coast of Mexico, a hurricane named Patricia, that was measured by the hurricane hunters to have winds of 215 miles per hour. That's not a gust, that's sustained. Those are the winds you encounter in a high-end EF5 tornado, so absolutely devastating sort of winds. Fortunately, that hurricane weakened before it made landfall as a Category 4 storm with 150 mile-an-hour winds.
And do we know of great storms in earlier centuries, even if we don't have the instruments?
You know, we do. There are a lot of records of hurricanes going back to colonial times, and in particular, there's a hurricane called the Great Hurricane, which occurred during the American Revolutionary War back in 1780. Now, the Great Hurricane was one of the Cape Verde-type storms that come off the coast of Africa and then impact the Lesser Antilles Islands. And in October of 1780, when it moved ashore over Barbados, the winds of that hurricane were so strong that it leveled every tree on the island, destroyed every structure on the island, destroyed the forts, took the heavy two-ton cannons and threw them hundreds of feet away from the forts. And not only did it fell all the trees, but it took the bark off the trees, which is a phenomenon we've never, ever seen in any other tropical cyclone in history, but we do see in EF5 tornadoes, those type of tornadoes with 200 mile per hour winds. So the theory is that the Great Hurricane of 1780 may have been one of these freak storms that, you know, one in 1,000 year type of storms that did have EF5 tornado winds in it.
All right, now getting to the Hansen paper, Ice Melt, Sea Level Rise, and Superstorms, my understanding of that, and I'm pretty limited, is a shift in ocean currents in the North Atlantic brought on by ever faster melting on Greenland will create conditions that could lead to giant storms. Is that what you get from it?
Sure. I mean, what you're seeing is that the ocean temperatures in particular are going to increase because of not only global warming, but also a shift in the ocean currents. And in fact, we can maybe see a little bit of a beginning of that right now in the North Atlantic. Most of the North Atlantic is hotter than usual. In fact, the ocean temperatures worldwide have been at record or near record levels over the past year due to, you know, global warming and an ongoing El Nino event. But if you look in the North Atlantic by Iceland, there's this unusual cool spot. In fact, it's near record cold ocean temperatures are observed there. And the thought is that maybe that's due to the fact that this ocean current shift is starting to begin. The Gulf Stream current is carrying less warm water to the north than it used to, which causes a little bit of a cool water spot to develop up there. And since less warm water is being transported up there, that means there's more warm water further south in the Atlantic to pile up and cause warmer ocean conditions. So, yeah, I mean, we expect the oceans to warm over the coming century. And just a 2 or 3 degree increase in the warmth of oceans, that's enough to potentially drive superstorms. And in fact, Hurricane Patricia last year that formed off the coast of Mexico, that took advantage of the warmest ocean waters ever recorded in that portion of the ocean. So that helped fuel its rise to 215-mile-per-hour winds.
So is it fair to say that the mechanics of storm creation described in the paper, if they develop, would agree with what we know from meteorology today?
Yeah, theory supports the idea that if you crank up the thermostat, you're going to crank up the intensity of hurricanes. They're heat engines that extract heat energy from the ocean and convert it to the mechanical energy of their winds. You provide more heat in, and you're going to get stronger winds coming out. And it's very interesting, in fact, if you actually crank up the thermostat way high to, say, 120 degrees at the surface, which is ridiculous as far as something we're not going to see in the next century or two due to global warming. But if you can somehow get the thermostat that high, you can get what are called hypercanes, which are kind of off-the-scale sort of hurricanes that have wind speeds over 500 miles per hour, central pressures down to 700 millibars, which is like only 70% of atmospheric pressure. And these storms go way to the top of the stratosphere. And we wouldn't want to see one of these storms because it can basically rearrange the entire climate system, cause destruction of the global ozone layer, and throw enough moisture high in the atmosphere that it'll block out the sun and cause kind of a volcanic winter scenario. So the models, they're very clear. You provide more energy to the system, you're going to get stronger storms.
And Jeff, one of our scientific guests talked about baroclinicity, and I didn't really know what it means. What does that mean in meteorology?
Yeah, there's two main ways that storms get energy. One is through the energy of the ocean waters, like hurricanes do. And what they do is they take water vapor off of the ocean, and the water vapor holds what we call latent heat, which means the heat that was required to convert it to vapor form. It maintains that energy, and when the water condenses, or when the vapor condenses into water, it releases that energy and powers the storm. Now, there's another source of energy for storms called baroclinicity, and all that means it's the difference between cold air and warm air, basically, or cold, dense air and warm, moist air. And what happens is that if you've got cold, dense air up high in the atmosphere and it sinks and is replaced by warm, moist air, which is less dense near the surface, then that's a release of potential energy. You've got basically an object falling, and as it falls, it releases its energy and helps power the storm. And that's the energy source that blizzards use to get going, and the normal sort of low-pressure systems that, march every few days across the mid-latitudes.
Okay, the other impact raised by Hansen et al., in fact, part of their proof, is a pattern of towering waves descending on the Caribbean from these storms, and it's partly dependent on the length of the ocean, or fetch, as the mariners say. Have you heard anything about larger-than-normal waves in the age of climate change?
It's tough. We don't have very good wave observations going back very far, but there is some thought that, yes, wave heights are increasing in some portions of some of the oceans, and it would stand to make sense. I mean, if you've got more heat energy available, I mean, that's potentially more energy to drive stronger winds and make bigger waves. So, yeah, we could potentially have bigger waves because of climate change.
I often wondered if there's any physical limit to how high waves could be. I don't really know.
Well, if you've got a 500-mile-per-hour wind, you're probably going to be able to get 200-foot-high waves. I mean, we've seen 100-foot-high waves in the oceans in huge hurricane force storms. But, yeah, if you crank up the wind speed, I don't see any reason to have even bigger waves than that.
The idea of black swans, where things that were thought to be impossible turn out to really exist, has become fairly popular now. But the American scientist Kerry Emanuel is worried about gray swans. Can you tell us about that, Jeff Masters?
A black swan is an event that's totally unexpected that you wouldn't think could occur based on historical records or physical understanding. But a gray swan is an event that hasn't occurred in historical times. But if you look at the physics of how the atmosphere behaves, then you think that, yeah, you know, something like this is possible. And one of these storms I think we've already had in the past is this great hurricane of 1780, 200-mile-per-hour winds. It was able to debark trees. No other storm's been able to do that in recorded history. And if we look at the physics of how the atmosphere behaves, these sorts of storms can be anticipated now because we have the physical understanding. We know how the climate's changing. And Dr. Emanuel's paper thought that a type of storm like the Great Hurricane of 1780, which maybe occurs only once every 1,000 years, can probably start occurring even more frequently than that with climate change, maybe by the end of the century, between one in every 400 years, or maybe even one in 60 years, depending on which climate model you're using. So I don't like those odds very good. I mean, yeah, a one in 100-year event doesn't sound very probable, but if you integrate over a 30-year period, then, you know, you keep rolling the dice, a 1% chance every year adds up, and then you have a 26% chance of a 1 in 100-year event happening. So basically, his gray swan paper is saying a hurricane like the Great Hurricane of 1780, you know, we're going to start seeing those by the end of the century. They're going to be, you know, once every 60 or 100 years on average, they're going to start popping up, whereas before you'd only expect one every 1,000 years.
And MIT seems to suggest that, with based on this Emanuel paper, that these storms could pop up in places we haven't expected, maybe even in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's kind of strange to think, but yeah, the Persian Gulf and the Red Sea, those have the hottest ocean temperatures of any bodies of water on the planet, and they are potentially going to get some pretty incredible storms. Those hot ocean temperatures are going to get even hotter with climate change. And yeah, we could see a Category 4 storm forming and hitting Dubai maybe and causing unprecedented havoc with the oil and gas industry.
That would change prices at the pump as well.
Well, you know, we need to get over onto solar and wind as soon as possible for a lot of reasons, and that's one. I mean, the whole infrastructure for the oil and gas industry is highly vulnerable to storms. And it already has been disrupted by a number of storms in the past. I'm thinking Hurricane Katrina caused a big disruption to the Gulf of Mexico oil and gas industry. And certainly the Middle East is prone to disruptions as well. There have been an increasing number of very strong storms in the Arabian Sea in recent years. In fact, we had two of them hit the country of Yemen last year, and that was an unprecedented occurrence, two Category 3 or stronger storms. So, yeah, this sort of thing is something to think about when we're planning our energy infrastructure.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, meteorologist and storm expert, Dr. Jeff Masters. Let's move to the southern hemisphere, Jeff. We've seen awful, deadly tropical cyclones already there this century. It's hard to imagine they could get worse, but could they?
You know, it's very interesting and a little worrisome. When you look at the global database for strong tropical cyclones, which is the catch-all term that we use to describe hurricanes and typhoons and what they simply call tropical cyclones in the southern hemisphere, we haven't ever seen a storm as strong as we had this year back in February. Tropical Cyclone Winston, 185-mile-per-hour winds hit Fiji as a Category 5 storm, devastating that island. Its most expensive natural disaster in history. So, yeah, the southern hemisphere had its strongest tropical cyclone in history this year. And over in the Indian Ocean, the southern Indian Ocean had its strongest tropical cyclone in history this year as well. Back in April, a storm called Fantala, 175-mile-per-hour winds. So in the span of just 8 months, we've seen the strongest tropical cyclone ever recorded in the South Indian Ocean. That was Fantala, the strongest ever recorded in the South Pacific. That was Winston, 185-mile-per-hour winds, and the strongest tropical cyclone ever recorded in the northern hemisphere, or the entire globe, actually, and that was Hurricane Patricia, with its 215-mile-per-hour winds back in October. So, you know, you look at that and you say, wow, I mean, if that isn't a warning shot over our bow, then what is? Maybe hearteningly, if you look at the longer-term statistics going back to 1990, which is the beginning of the good satellite record globally, we really can't say we see an increase in these most powerful of storms. I mean, the database isn't very long, though, and not very good. So the jury's out right now whether we're actually starting to see these changes. Certainly, climate models are expecting to see them. We expect the strongest storms to get stronger, but it's going to be a matter of decades probably before we can draw the line and connect the dots and say, okay, it's happening.
You know, in a recent program, we heard from a leader of the Carteret Islands. That's a chain in Papua New Guinea, which is being washed over by the sea to the point where they may become the first permanent climate refugees. If Hansen and his team are right, islands in different parts of the world may become uninhabitable in the next few decades, they're saying. What do you think?
Yeah, certainly sea level rise is already nibbling away at a number of islands. There's an island off the coast of Louisiana that is going to have to move, and they're in the process of trying to find the money to do it. A couple islands off the coast of Alaska, Kivalina, looks like they're going to have to move because of erosion problems due to rising seas. And that's going to continue to increase in coming decades. There's going to be, you know, a lot of trouble maintaining the defenses against the rising sea. And we're just simply going to have to abandon some areas because it's just not going to be cost-effective anymore to keep on putting up these barriers and replenishing beaches and so on. It's got to stop at some point. We've got to draw the line and say, okay, it's time to retreat.
Yes, and after every big cyclone or hurricane, politicians immediately promise, we will rebuild. They say that even in the lowest parts of Louisiana after Katrina or the most exposed parts of the East Coast after Sandy. I wonder when they'll start to say, we will relocate.
You know, it's written into the law. The part of the law for FEMA called the Stafford Act says that when we lose a chunk of land due to a storm surge, we have to put all the infrastructure back on that land. And there's a part of Alabama called Dauphin Island, which is off the coast. It's a barrier island. The western end of that island has been basically destroyed four or five times by hurricanes in the past 20 years, most recently in Hurricane Katrina. And the entire end of the island was washed away and moved, closer to the coast by, you know, several hundred yards. And what the Army Corps had to do by law is go and dredge the sucker, put it back where it was, fill in the island, and put the streets and all the power lines and the sewers back there, because that's what the law said they had to do. And guess what? We paid for it. And there are several other places that are that way, too, barrier islands that are getting washed away more frequently in storm surges. And right now, the way the law is written is we got to keep on doing something that probably doesn't make sense. I mean, we've got to retreat from some of these barrier islands and take our time to put our resources where it makes more sense, defend parts of the coast that are worth defending, where they're more heavily populated and not so vulnerable.
I hear a law that needs to be changed. Now, Jeff, I picture a situation where storms and storm surges wreck major cities time after time, to the point where we can no longer afford to rebuild, a kind of death by a thousand nasty weather events. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, there have been cities in the past that have been abandoned due to multiple hurricane strikes. Indianola, I think is how you pronounce it, a coastal city in Texas, got hit by a number of, I think, two different storm surges over a period of a few decades, and they basically abandoned the town. And that may be coming. I mean, certainly New Orleans is at risk. After Katrina, okay, they rebuilt the defenses. They put in $14 billion of new infrastructure. But if we get a Category 4 or 5 storm hitting New Orleans head-on, sort of a 1 in 200-year storm, then those defenses are not equipped to withstand that. And we may end up abandoning New Orleans in that case. I mean, the city will get flooded. The below-sea-level bowl will fill with water. And the people may just decide they don't want to come back. So we'll see. I mean, sea level rise, if Hansen is right, could be many meters by the end of the century, in which case we're going to start seeing not just one major city, but several probably have those sorts of reckoning, days of reckoning. The insurance industry is going to pull out, people are going to move, and we'll end up retreating.
Yes, and we didn't say the word Miami. Well, look, weather in the southern U.S. seems so strange lately. We've seen flooding and strings of tornadoes. Is that just part of life there, or do you think there's something unusual going on?
We've certainly seen that heavy downpours, the upper 1% of the spectrum, are increasing, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. And certainly the downpours in the south this past year are part of that trend. Now, they're also due to the fact we had an El Nino event, in fact, one of the strongest, if not the strongest on record. And when you get that sort of naturally occurring event, it changes storm tracks so that you get more heavy rain-bearing storms moving over the southern U.S. So, yeah, partially natural, partially climate change. We are seeing an increase in the heaviest rain events, and what we saw this past winter was part of that trend.
As we wrap up, I'd like to get your thoughts on the Hansen-led paper, Ice Melt, Sea Level Rise, and Superstorms. Did you form a general impression of the storm predictions in there?
Hansen tends to be at the upper end of the dire scenario sort of scientific ideas of what are out there. If you look at some of the literature by other climate scientists, they don't see such a dire scenario happening. But universally, I hear these more cautious-sounding climate scientists say, you know, Hansen could be right. You know, he's at the upper end, but the science and the theory, the modeling, all says is that, yeah, it could happen this way. And we got to take into account not only the most probable outcome, but the upper end sort of outcome, the outliers, because outliers do happen. And one thing we do know from past experience is surprises do happen. In fact, surprises are expected. We can't pigeonhole everything that's going to happen due to climate change because there's just too many variables. The climate's too chaotic and not well enough understood. We're going to get surprises, and some high-end surprises are more likely, unfortunately, than the low-end surprises, I think. We're going to get some off-scale disasters that we never saw coming, black swans. And, well, Hansen's giving us a gray swan sort of scenario here. I mean, we can anticipate some of this through theory and modeling.
I totally agree with what you've just said. Now, I haven't seen a Jeff Masters book about storms. Have you considered it?
I have a book, a fiction book I'm working on, which presents a sort of worst-case scenario, or plausible, not even worst-case, but how things could be in 20 or 30 years, or maybe even today if we get a very bad weather year. I mean, it's not a very big stretch of the imagination to think that we could get a flooding event like wiped out the Mississippi River levee system in 1927, combined with a Category 5 hurricane maybe making landfall, and other worldwide extreme weather events, droughts in China, flooding in Europe, causing a crash to the global agricultural system, causing worldwide chaos, basically. So, yeah, that's my novel. I'm thinking of toning it down, maybe, because I don't want it to be, you know, apocalyptic. I want to have some hope. And there is hope in this whole scenario. I mean, people are very creative and very resourceful. And, you know, we have some of the answers we need to keep a disastrous future from happening, like, you know, could if we keep on going business as usual. So that's what I'm working on. I don't know if I'll ever finish it. I've been working on it 5 years already, and it just seems I haven't had the time to really put into it to get it whipped into shape just because there's so much crazy weather to talk about on my blog all the time.
Well, that's the problem I have doing this show. I think I'm catching up, and then so many jaw-dropping things happen that you can't cover it all. I'm Alex Smith. We've been talking with meteorologist Jeff Masters. He's ridden government research planes into the eye of a hurricane, and no doubt he's driven some back roads looking for twisters. And now Jeff writes about big weather developments in the blog, The Weather Underground, at wonderground.com. And what else do you do, Jeff? Do you provide weather forecasting services?
Personally, I don't do that anymore. I mean, are you talking about my company or myself?
I'd like to know about your company.
We provide a webpage that has, just for free, basically weather information for the world. You type in a location and get a forecast. We also have a network of personal weather stations. These are backyard sorts of weather stations that are over 200,000, I think, now. So we have just an unprecedented granularity to our weather that you can get. So not just forecasts, you can get these observations from personal weather stations all over the world. In fact, we generate weather forecasts for those weather stations, too. We also have a huge community that's very involved in participating in observing the weather and talking about it. My blog comments frequently run to several thousand per day. This is kind of an online forum where people talk about the weather. We have 1.9 million user-uploaded photos of weather that people have uploaded to share. Anybody who wants to can start their own blog to talk about the weather. We've got several hundred bloggers who write regularly about the weather on our website. And we've got a huge network of weather webcams as well. So it's just a giant hotbed of everything weather on our website. And I kind of anchor it by giving my daily commentary on what's going on in the world. And my main passion is for hurricanes, so this time of year I start getting cranked up to talk about them. But during the rest of the year, and I'll talk about tornadoes and tornado season and winter storm season.
And that's all at wonderground.com. Thank you so much, Jeff Masters, for your time and for your passion about all this.
All right, Alex, you're welcome.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.